What's up, you filthy flapjacks? I'm Wes, and you're listening to the Ear Coffee Podcast. In today's quarantine episode, I interviewed two-thirds of Alien Book Club. The band just released their new EP, and I'm not even having fun anymore. We talked about the new EP, their January tour with Shattercones, what they've got in the works, and a whole lot more. Here's my conversation with Anita, Andrea, Meek, and Allison of Alien Book Club. How are we all doing this morning?
Good.
Great.
Doing well.
Awesome. So as I said, we have two-thirds of the band here. So if each of you want to just share your role in the band, what instruments you play, if you play more than one, your primary one, because y'all all play a lot of things. And then I guess just say what Thomas and Amber do, because they are the dearly departed for this morning.
Let's introduce our absentee members first. So Amber uses she, her pronouns, she plays guitar. Thomas uses he, him. He plays drums and percussion. I'm Anita. I use she and her. And I play guitar and sing.
I'm Andrea. I use she and her. And I play bass and sing.
I'm Allison. I use she and her. And I play saxophone mostly.
What else do you play?
West End Maine.
On the album, because like you have
on the others. Album.
I play flute and trumpet as well.
Wow.
Amazing.
Amazing. And all the saxophones.
Yeah.
And I'm Meek, and I use he, him, and I play keyboards and synthesizers.
Lovely. I always like to start interviews kind of the same way, just kind of ease into it a little bit. Just ask, what were some of your first, I guess, formative connections with music? Because I often find that people that go on to play, create, be in a band, have distinct kind of moments, like, or things that they remember from when they were growing up, that where they realize that music is something that's just really, really important to them beyond just like, you know, everyone listens to music, just beyond that, because it takes a bit more to go up and play in front of a bunch of people, you know? So what were some of those first kind of formative experiences with music? Go in like a line or something.
I don't know, like, my family took a lot of road trips, and so whenever we're on a road trip, we listen to like a bunch of albums just on repeat, and I don't know, kind of just started to love it more than what seemed normal. And then after I joined my first band in high school, I was just hooked. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do as long as I can do it.
Yeah.
For me, I remember wanting to learn how to play the piano when I was really young. And my grandma started to teach me how to play. And from there, I joined a choir, like a public choir, and then I did school choir, and then I took piano lessons, and then I started playing violin in school, and I don't know, I've just loved music for so long, and then in the last couple of years, we started to learn how to play bass kind of just for fun, and then I was kind of necessary at one point, so I've just been doing that, and I really love it.
Were you done? Sorry.
Nope, yep, I'm done.
For me, I think music has been like just part of my life as long as I can remember. My mom is a classically trained pianist. So when I was like 3, my mom signed me up for like children's music classes with like hand drums and stuff. And then moving on from that, my mom like signed me up for piano lessons when I was pretty young, and we always had like music in the house. So that was like just part of growing up for me. And then I joined band in 5th grade, and then I just like fell in love with playing jazz in middle school.
That's what does it.
Yeah. And then I just kept doing that and playing saxophone and getting a music degree and stuff. But it started with like my mom for sure. She's a flute player and piano player.
For me, yeah, music was probably started in my life when my dad, like my stepdad, moved in with us when I was like 4 or 5. I don't really remember ever hearing music before then, but my dad is the kind of person where if he's in a room, there's something playing. He just played a ton of stuff, just like, you know, like he really likes like 90s, like gangster rap and stuff. But like outside of that, like he would play like Nirvana, like Guns N' Roses, you know, like just a bunch of like old country music. He's like a black dude from like the south side of Chicago, you know what I mean? So like not the kind of stuff that you'd think that you'd be playing, like Dusty's R&B records, but also like modern rock and pop. And so like I always had a bunch of music going on around me when I was growing up. And then when I was like 13, I think I was in like a music class, just like the kind of music class they'd make you take in like middle school.
Yeah.
And my teacher would start the class by playing A Change of Seasons by Dream Theater. and I thought it was the coolest thing ever because it was this long ass song, just like 20 minutes, you know what I mean? We never got to the end of the song. So one day I went home and I listened to the whole song. I was like, this is the craziest thing ever. And I was just obsessed with metal for years.
That's so funny. Usually they're playing like Vivaldi's Four Seasons or something like for like middle schoolers, but nah, Dream Theater.
No, Dream Theater. It was fantastic. And
I love that.
That's perfect. So Alien Book Club has been in some way, shape, or form has been active for a lot longer than I'd say most of the bands we talk to, because like in some capacity, music that is at least now on the Bandcamp under Alien Book Club, whether that was the name it was released under, because the early stuff wasn't, has came out like as early as 2016. So we can kind of, we don't have to like go too in depth with this because we want to get to the main EP, of course. But yeah, just talk about how the band started. It was initially Anita and Andrea, correct?
Mm-hmm.
As like the Wilt Champion, that whole really early deal.
Yeah, that was just so we were living in a cabin. We don't spend all our time at cabins, but we were living in a cabin at the time, and this is like in Webster, Wisconsin, way up north.
Actually, and that's where my grandparents have had a cabin since I was a little kid, like right in Webster. It's so nice, yeah.
So I was in another band called Marsupial Suit, and that band was based out of the cities. And then I just kind of wanted to start doing like my own little side recording project. So I started that band, and then Marsupial Suit had a show, and then that band fell apart before the show. So we had to take, you know, Wilt Champion out there, and then we'd kind of just changed the name. Cause also at that time I was kind of realizing some stuff about myself and that maybe Wilts isn't the name that I'd want to, you know, have a fake name, and maybe this whole like guy thing isn't working out. So then there's kind of that big switch, and then kind of Alien Book Club started, but we really didn't get like really into the scene until about a year ago.
Yeah.
Like I think, correct me if I'm wrong, like the first official Alien Book Club release, it was Janet the Planet in 2018. Was that like the first one under the name, at least? Because the other stuff was like Underachievement Award and then earlier stuff. And that was the first time it was a quartet. You added Thomas and Meek to the band. And I guess talk about how those two came into the fold, into the Alien Book Club universe.
Well, Thomas was the drummer of Marsupial Suit, so we just snatched him over real quick, we had another guitarist, but we played this god-awful show, like, we bombed at Paper House so hard.
At, like, 2 o'clock on a Friday.
We cleared the room, and he quit, like, the very next day, so a couple months after that, we were like, let's get back out there, but we need more people in the band because I don't want to be a trio. So I went online. Someone on Reddit was posting their beats looking to collaborate with people, and I was like, The keyboard in that doesn't sound sampled. It sounds real. I'm going to ask this guy if he plays keyboard. And turned out he did. Turned out he lived kind of close. And turned out he wanted to come over.
The funniest part about
it
is that the keyboard and the beat that they were talking about was definitely sampled.
The band's based on a lie. Oh, wow.
You're out of the band, me.
That's funny.
Yeah, so then we joined, me joined in. And then we got Amber, I was working at a record store and just really clicked with her. And then we jammed a couple times. I realized that she's probably the best guitarist in the Twin Cities. Yeah. And I was like, ah, I might take you. And then Allison joined because Andrea and
we jammed
her
together. Yeah. And I was like, she's cool. I think we should ask her.
Just throw some jazz in to the stirring pot of sound. Yeah, I guess kind of focusing more on like the stuff that has happened since you've all, like, the full band has been together. Skipping over like the couple, like the singles from like 2018, 2019, but Alien Book Club, the self-titled like EP, was that just to kind of get the last four singles just on streaming and kind of get the music out there beyond just keeping it on Bandcamp? Because that's just like a random kind of release. It's just like collects like the last four tracks that y'all had released. Was that kind
correct
of like thought process?
That
yeah
was kind of make those tracks more relevant to the way people were actually listening to music, because not that many people, you know, go on Bandcamp anymore. And we just needed to get them on Spotify and have something out there now that we were playing shows. So that was kind of the idea with it, is just get it out there fast.
Yeah. The next one was just the two-track Alien Butt Plug, almost goofed that. Not used to saying the word butt plug out loud. Talk a little bit about that. You recorded that with Jack Daly, who's done a lot of stuff in the scene. Really cool. Yeah, talk a little bit about how you came together with those couple songs and worked with him for just another single, because like it seems like every couple months there's some sort of new Alien Book Club related music out in the world.
Yeah. So I heard the Lap Dogs EP and I was like, this is one of the greatest things I've ever recorded. And I found out who did it and I was like, we're gonna go here. And it was a really good experience. Yeah, Zach's a really good engineer, really easy to work with. That was the last EP before Allison joined.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. I wish it was just longer. I wish we did more songs. Our intention was to do more, but we never got around to it. And then it was split time.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, with the split, where your dad now with Shattercones. Was that kind of conceptualized with the co-headlining, I guess, tour in mind? Or was that, did the tour come out of like, oh, we're doing this split together, you're a really cool band, let's do something with this? Like, what was the order of things, I guess, versus like with the split and the subsequent tour?
So I guess it kind of all started. We were just playing a couple shows and we were really drunk at a bar and I was like, split, let's do a split. And then it kind of just actually came into reality. And then they were like, we're going on tour. Do you guys want to come with and do that? And, that was really gracious of them. And we really appreciate them taking us along. Mm-hmm. And cause that was our first tour, for five of us, that was like our first tour ever. So yeah, just kind of all, it was good timing, I guess is what I'd say.
Yeah. The one thing I do specifically want to ask about with that is the re-recording of Life in Hell, which was the first song ever put online in any sort of adjacent Alien Book Club way. Why bring
you did
that
your
song?
Homework.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I saw that like there's more than like one thing on Bandcamp. I'm like, shit, better check this out. why bring back? Was it just like, oh, this is our first song. We want to, I guess, resuscitate this in a specific way. Yeah, it's a great song, but
it's just a good song.
Yeah,
like, it was a staple of our set. Okay. Like, I felt like that we needed to get it re-recorded.
And it sounded so different.
It sounded different. But yeah, that being said, I do prefer the original version. Like, and ooh, I think I'm just going to keep that in mind from now on. Like, re-recording songs, a song's really at its best when you, like, first get into it and not after, you know, like, 3 or 4 years after it's written and you've played it a million times. Not that that song is... Yeah. So what we should have done is had Meek and Allison just re-record on the original track.
That's dub over.
A little overdone.
Dummy.
But yeah, re-recording songs, I think, has honestly been a mistake.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, just in the future have just every like new member just go back and remix like the old album. Just have like Meek and Allison and Thomas and everyone just remix the Underachievement Award in its entirety. Just
sounds like a fun project.
I feel like I brought up that idea like a couple months ago and everyone was like, no, Anita.
it'd be kind of random and probably not a good idea, but it'd be interesting and pretty cool at least. That's funny. So I didn't initially realize it at first because I made the mistake of like I got distracted midway through listening to Alien, which is like the main song. I didn't initially realize that, at least as far as what I heard, was it's just Alien and then the three parts of Alien. That it's four tracks. Is that a mistake on my end or
no? It's kind of a mistake on my end. That was just so. I sent you like.
I was like, "What is Alien?"
I sent you like a stream of like all the three songs together because I was lazy and I didn't want to put like. Yeah, so that's just like the whole EP.
Yeah, I was like, "That's an interesting thing. It's a four track, but it's just a three track."
It's a four track. Get all three songs together, and then all three songs separate. No, it's just three songs.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. All my other questions are now irrelevant. No, I'm kidding. So it really feels like a culmination of what the last like 2 years of Alien Book Club releases have been building up to, and I mean that not a lot can be said of just all the members actually being on it and getting added over time, and this is actually like all six of you working together. But yeah, just talk a little bit about how those three songs came together. Like how did they start? And because I imagine like just how there's a lot of time and work that's gone into taking them from just those initial ideas to the utterly off the wall end results that people will be hearing. How did they start and how did they get to where they currently are and what people will be hearing when they click the play button?
The songs kind of, a lot of them are older songs, maybe written like 2017, 2018. And yeah, like you said, this is probably the first EP that we've, really as a six of us, thought about what is necessary. Because like take Life in Hell, for example, like the re-recorded version of Life in Hell. We're just having Allison like double parts. Mm-hmm. And like right. Like it's cool and all, but like it's not anything special. Where like on this EP we really we're focusing on how do we best balance all six of us. And showcase everyone's abilities and everyone's talents. And that's one thing I'm really happy with the EP. I really feel like it showcases everyone really well. Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Sorry, what was your question?
just how did the songs like go from those older forms that were obviously unreleased to where they were? And everyone can kind of talk about how, like, what was your how did you come up with your parts? How did you figure out how you were going to, each one of you is going to work your abilities, work your sound into the song to culminate with, I guess, just the what you hear is just Alien Book Club. It's not any individual. It's the whole band.
I don't know. How'd you guys come up with your parts?
Sure.
It doesn't have to be like I was sitting there at the keyboard and came up with a riff. It doesn't have to be that nitty gritty, but just more overall.
I mean, like, I came up with a lot of my parts just like from trial and error, each show of the tour playing a different thing and just figuring out what worked the best.
Interesting.
I got like a new synth right before tour, like the day of we left for tour. It showed up in the mail 10 minutes before we left. So I learned how to use it on tour. And before then, I was just using like the little Casio tone keyboard or whatever. So like having like the second layer changed the way that I approached writing parts. What four songs are even on this EP? We have Pathetic.
Three songs.
It's actually only three. That was my mistake.
Oh, yeah. Pathetic, Escape from New York, right? And
Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy Butler, yeah. Yeah, Pathetic was also weird because I did the solo for that over like FaceTime or whatever, right? And
no, that was the outro for Escape from New York, like the synth on the Escape from New York. The solo you did at your house though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I don't think we did it over FaceTime.
Right? Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, because that's right when I got the modular synth. So another synthesizer arrived.
Ooh. Yeah.
And learned how to use that while I was recording my part.
That's dangerous.
Please send us money to get used out of extreme amounts of debt because of these synths.
Yeah.
You go, Allison.
Some of my like favorite things that I did on the CP were, so in Escape from New York, I in like the middle section I play flute and alto sax. So it's like a back and forth thing kind of, which was a cool, we like worked on it as we were recording and like figuring out what I want to play through that, and I recorded the alto solo parts first. And then we went through, like, later, and I added the flute in, and it's kind of like a back-and-forth conversation kind of sounding thing. And I thought that was fun to figure out and play both parts through that. And then on Jimmy Butler, I learned how to play the trumpet as we were recording.
There's trumpet on Jimmy Butler now?
Yeah, the mariachi trumpet.
Yeah.
It's only, like, six notes or something, well. I think.
It's a very short amount of trumpet,
but
essential to the song.
That's
hard. Going from alto or like sax to brass, I tried it and just ate shit. It was horrible.
My range is very small.
For my parts, I don't really remember coming up with a lot of them. It's just been like jamming, you know, since we lived together, we just jam a lot and we're just working on the parts. And then I remember for Pathetic, Amber came up and she wrote like the middle section of it with the guitar and bass. And when she originally wrote that, she came up with this bass part that was just like, I don't think I can do this. And like, I started to try to learn it and I kind of got it a little bit, but it was just like crazy hard for how fast it was. So we simplified it a bit. And I think actually we all kind of like it a little better with the little bit simplified. It has like a really dancey groove to it that whenever we perform it, Anita and Allison are always like dancing That's around. Oh, I turned my camera around. Here's some bug spray. I don't know how I did that.
Yeah.
Shaking my finger. but yeah, that's pretty much it for mine.
Yeah. Who did you record the tracks just yourselves and like kind of like, I guess talk about a little bit of the recording process. Was it done, I'm assuming pre-lockdown, or like was something, maybe some stuff was added in the last like month or so when it's not, people have not been able to get together. Yeah. Just how did you get the tracks recorded?
We recorded at home, we tracked at home and then, a lot of the drums were tracked from like 4 or 5 months ago. We were working on like a full length album and then coronavirus kind of started to pick up and they're like, let's just do three songs. And so a lot of it, all of it was tracked at home, but a lot of it was tracked at, you know, like me tracked a lot of stuff at his house. But most of it was tracked at our house. And then we sent it to Abe Anderson to mix.
Of course.
golden.
Yeah.
And we're so happy with the job he did. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Could have gotten him to add some like extra trumpet parts. Come on.
yeah.
So maybe this is just me being biased because I'm naturally drawn more to is at least when I first listened to the first couple times I listened to something, I'm drawn to the music more than the lyrics. And so just in the process of kind of just revisiting the entire discography, the entire back catalog, do you feel the same way where like music, the actual like sound of the songs takes a little bit more precedence over the lyrics, and like the lyrics are more just like something to be saying while you're singing the melodies, and like the melodies obviously are very important. Or do you try to do, are they more important to you as a, I guess, Anita, Andrea, if you're the ones that came up with them or whoever's contributed that kind of stuff to the songs? Yeah, I guess, how do you view music, like the music versus lyrics? Like where does the importance lie for the band?
We always come up with the music first. Like when I'm writing a song, I'll just sing random words until the words actually happen. And often, mostly at shows. Yeah. And I never remember my lyrics anyway. But that's not to say I don't like care about the lyrics or really think about them. And then I'll do stuff like choose, you know, like John Carpenter movies to talk about, or, you know, erotic cannibalism.
Yeah, they're very humorous and off the wall kind of topics.
Yeah.
I just want to mention that, like, two of the songs on this EP, Jimmy Butler and Escape from New York, both, for one, had different names and were about completely different things. Up and until recently. Yeah, and I don't remember what Jimmy Butler used to be called, but it definitely was a taxicab senator. And it was not about Jimmy Butler, the basketball player.
They just change randomly what the songs are about.
We played those songs as like the other versions for a long time before like you actually like changed the lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. I don't know, like, that's lyrics. Lyrics are stupid. Lyrics really aren't important.
That's going to be the poll quote, no.
if I'm being forced to write lyrics, which I pretty much am because I can't just make up words on the recording, then I'm going to write something about something I want to write about, which is John Carpenter movies and erotic cannibalism and guys I don't like from Fargo and you know, stuff like that.
This is sort of irrelevant, but is Janet the Planet, is that inspired by Schoolhouse Rock? Like Interplanet Janet?
No, and you're not the first person to say that.
I would imagine that I wouldn't be, yeah.
Janet's a Zappa groupie, a Frank Zappa groupie.
Oh.
there's a movie, I think it's Baby Snakes, yeah, she's on. He pulls her and her friend Donna on stage and make them like, who'd they whip? Did they whip Donna?
Yeah, they brought this guy's boyfriend on stage, and Frank gives him, like, a real-ass whip. And he's like, whip him.
Like, lightly, like, throwing the whip at her.
And, so had to write a song about that.
Yeah, and she's just, like, a really tall... And her name, she introduced herself on stage as Janet the Planet. Because she's so tall.
Then just whips a guy. Cool. given the... even if it was about Schoolhouse Rock, I feel like that, as far as song topics for Alien Book Club goes, wouldn't be completely out of the question. Just all these kind of irreverent, surprising, almost like, I don't want to say like tacky, but like these kind of like the B-movie tacky, where it's like, it's still really enjoyable and really fun, but it's just like, it's just very, very, I can't think of the word. It's like...
Very campy.
Campy. Thank you. That is 100% what I was thinking of. Let's try not to get too bummed out about this next question, but live shows are extremely important for Alien Book Club. Yeah, I see the frown. I'm so sorry. How do you, I guess, when you're coming up with the songs, do you have that in mind when you're coming up with them? Because like you come up with them, it's just as an expression. Thinking, I guess, maybe more like, oh, how are we gonna record this? Are you given how I guess, essential, like, live shows seem to be just, and that's just coming from the perspective of someone who's been to a couple shows. Is that something that's in mind? Like, are live shows something you're considering when you're coming up with different songs, when you're, I mean, obviously you're, when you're practicing, duh, but when you're coming up with the songs, is that something you're kind of even at least somewhat aware of?
Yeah, especially now. Like, I, you know, 3 years ago when it was, like, you know, the Wilt Champion album, and we were working on before, like, the Alien Book Club EP, mm-hmm. It was all, I wasn't thinking about live shows because we weren't playing live shows. I was in a fucking cabin, you know? but, like, now it's, every song is like, how is this going to go over live? Like, we have a doo-wop song and,
yep.
and
yes, you do.
Song. that song is like, okay, this is going to kill in a punk house. Like, that's really what punk houses need is more doo-wop.
True.
so yeah, it's definitely an intention now. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, that's how we get like our that's how we base, you know, how good a song is really is how okay. much people like it.
yeah. That segues kind of nicely into my follow-up. How do, like, when you play the songs live, especially if you're playing, I guess, unreleased songs before they're recorded, before they're put out online in any capacity, does that influence how you end up taking them, like, when you take them to record? I guess, what's the connection? Like, what's, like, the through line for that? And Meek, you mentioned that you were just on tour, just improvising different stuff every night. So I'm assuming that how things go live has a pretty direct influence on how each of you kind of figures out what you're going to play and how you're going to put the song together.
Oh yeah. There's like stuff in older releases, like from the split and stuff like that, where there's parts that I played in the recording, cause that's how I was playing it at that point, that I just don't play them like that at all anymore. the dog shit solo is completely different. The way that I play dog shit is very different now.
Me too.
That's pretty much every single song. Every song that we've ever played, I've probably changed my parts 4 or 5 times after recording. And these songs that are coming out now, I will almost definitely change my parts. It probably won't even sound the way it sounds right now at the first show, to be honest, after quarantine. So yeah, our songs are always changing. I think that's one of the cool things about this band.
For me, between recording and live, it's a lot different because on some of the tracks I play like 3 or 4 different instruments between saxophones and flute and stuff.
Yeah.
Which I clearly can't play multiple saxophones at a time.
You could.
Live. Very
you could.
Well.
You could. I've seen it happen.
Roland Kirk, come on.
Just hang them all around your neck.
I don't want to bring 5 wind instruments to a house show.
That's a better reason, yeah.
So it's like, usually live I just play tenor, but on like recordings I'm willing to play like multiple instruments at once and able to. Mm-hmm. So I add other parts in recordings that I wouldn't be able to do live, which is a cool thing about recording, but I like playing live best.
Mm-hmm. I think you should just bring like a rack and just have all the saxophones just in the row house basement. Just tear it up.
I have stands for them all. them
See, it needs to happen.
And then they all crash to the ground.
Oh, no. Do you have anything for the two of you, Anita and Andrea, when you're coming up, when you're doing stuff live versus how you take, when you take stuff to record, I guess, as the project's like masterminds, as you kind of put it?
I don't know. When it's recording, especially with this, because we knew we weren't going to be playing live for a while. It was like, well, how can we make this impossible to play live? And a lot of that was, you know, multi-layering and stuff. I think Baby Won't Cheat My Face, we did a song for like the Brace Cove quarantine yep. comp, and that has this it has this like weird jazzy bebop from hell bridge, and that obviously cannot be replicated live because there's, you know, just the layers were basically recorded at random and then like spliced together digitally. Mm-hmm. You know, what was played isn't even what you hear. So that's really been the intention, is using the studio or my house as like an instrument of its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of one of the best ways that I've heard anyone, like, I've heard it, I feel like it's some classic rock jackass has said that before, like, they're like, the studio is an instrument, but, like, they're right, and you make a very good point by bringing that up, yeah.
I think it was Brian Eno, by the way, so some studio jackass. Yeah,
he's the studio jackass, and I love him.
Yeah,
damn it.
Brian Eno.
All my now I feel horrible.
Brian Eno.
I shit-talked my musical icon, god damn. continuing on with, I guess, a little bit of, let's not get too sad over this, the tour with Shattercones. I don't, I rarely ever see, especially like Minnesota bands tour to this, like head that far south and just do like tours in that, in those states. They usually like either hit East Coast or just stay within the Midwest, and that's for a myriad of reasons, I'm sure. But so you said you kind of hopped on that tour, just like it was already pretty much in motion, and then Shattercones were just like, hey, come with. yeah
they had a show already planned in New Orleans, and the rest of the tour wasn't really booked yet, and so we kind of worked together on booking that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all kind of based around the show in New Orleans, so that's why we had to go so far south, and yeah. it was really cool. It was really awesome to go play in the south.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm. I love the south.
I recommend it to all bands to go south. Yeah, it was so cool.
The
punks down there, they were craving some more punk and a little less country, I think.
What were highlights from the tour for each of you?
I think, like, one of my favorites was we played at this house called The Spot in Louisiana.
Hammond. Why not?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that house is closed. I don't know if they've relocated. I think they were planning on it. But it was a really cool punk house in Hammond, Louisiana, that really didn't seem like it would have that cool of a place. And the age group there was interesting because it was a little bit older than what you typically see here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And that was kind of nice being the oldest member of the band.
Yeah. The child that played.
There was a kid there too. Like, somebody brought their kid and we had the kid play a song with us. They played drums.
<That's>... They replaced Thomas.
They had such a good time. It was adorable.
Yeah,
it's like your Dave Grohl moment.
It was very cute.
Anita, what's your highlight?
Valdosta, Georgia. We played another house. The Valdosta DIY house was just one of the coolest houses around. And Valdosta, no offense to the city, it's a city in the absolute middle of nowhere, and they have such a good DIY scene there. Like, everyone knows each other, and there's really only this one house, and it's really like the only music venue there. But it was probably like our most energetic show. That's the show I jumped off the amplifier stack and crashed it all, and like so much fun, and like, you know, teaching the audience the words, they could sing along, and like it was fun. Yeah, I miss Valdosta a lot.
What about you guys?
I think my highlight was the New Orleans show. When we played at Gasa Gasa, we met Cosmodog, which are our
friends. Cosmodog.
Such a cool band. You should check them out. And then we like went and stayed at their house. We didn't stay at their house, but we went and visited their house after, and like hung out. And one of them fell asleep.
He's narcoleptic.
Like, we were sitting on his like enclosed porch, and he went inside to get some beers, and we're like, oh, he's taking a while. We look inside, he just passed out on the floor.
He just laid down and took like a 5-minute nap and then came back.
That's...
And we still talk to them now, and they're so sweet. And we want them to come to Minnesota when they can.
Yeah. They'll have to drag him on up here.
Yeah. What was your favorite, Meek?
Gossip Gossip was great. Hattiesburg.
Hattiesburg.
We met the greatest band in Mississippi, Nikki V and the Night Terrors. Freaking also, they're just the homies now. They're our best friends. We have a group chat with them. It's great. There are weed friends, expert shit posters. We stand.
Something that really became apparent to me after seeing a couple live shows back in like February and January is that Alien Book Club has this really unique place in the scene. I think one of the shows was when Meek was still like dead or something, and I just had no idea what the hell y'all were talking about, but just like Meek wasn't there. And then then there's the Bob Ross Mabah show where you were back, and I was just like, oh, cool.
I work Saturday night. If you come on a show on a Saturday night, I just can't be there because I have work. And I took off 2 weeks.
I say that you're dead like all the time. Yeah,
that's Anita was like, Meek's dead. I'm like, oh, I hope not.
Sometimes the burden of living is just too much. You gotta take a break.
Yeah. But yeah, something that became really apparent is that the band has just this really unique place in the DIY scene, just to be broad with it, because you don't sound like, I mean, any band ever, but like, especially anyone in that you'd typically see on like a Friday night in any of the house shows. But you're a lot of those bands that kind of operate on their own wavelength almost kind of have to, aren't really in the scene. They're like, they maybe play every once in a while, but they're kind of stuck. Whereas Alien Book Club is still totally in it, playing shows with a lot of like the more, I guess, typical bands, if you will. I don't want to, like, typical isn't bad. That's not me shaming people that don't have saxophone players, but maybe a little bit. So given that, what's kind of been the experience, especially like lately, once now that the band's kind of been at its full power for a couple months or several months, I should say, what's been the experience of kind of being in the scene, but still being totally your own beast, I guess, the band being its just own totally unique thing? That's a very long-winded question.
I feel like even though we're like pretty different, it's still a cool scene that we can get a lot of inspiration from in different ways. And I feel like even though we sound different, we can use those sounds that we might have in common. And we're like friends with so many people that it's a cool atmosphere to have like a different vibe at shows. And just because we like sound different, it adds a cool layer to that. And keeping our own sound regardless of that.
Mm-hmm. Did Allison just completely sum it up or?
Yeah, I think it's really weird, honestly. It's like we never know what to expect. I remember that like before quite a few shows were like, oh man, are they even gonna like us, because we don't sound anything like the bands that we're playing with, is this really our scene, you know, kind of a thing. And I don't know. We just have such a good time, and I think that it's that goes through to the crowd that, like, I don't know, we all just have a good time together with the crowd, and the crowd becomes part of the show, and we love to interact with them and kind of just goof around, teach them the lyrics so they can sing along.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody slam dance to doo-wop. Up until I think it was the Seward show, and there was just like, it was like a couple people, and then like I think a random homeless guy were just losing their minds.
To, not wearing any shoes.
It was the shoeless homeless guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was great, and but I was like also like a little worried for his feet. I'm like, someone's wearing combat boots. I'm afraid for his toes.
No, all winter he doesn't wear them outside.
He doesn't ever wear shoes.
Okay.
He hasn't worn shoes in years.
He also doesn't have a name.
He doesn't believe in nomenclature.
That's, I respect that.
He's my
that.
Favorite
that's,
member of the scene.
That's very punk of, to be shoeless and reject names as a concept.
very philosophical thing, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You already mentioned that the plans for an album that now is an EP were ruined by our darling COVID. How else has COVID affected the band, and what have you done to kind of respond to that? Because I know a lot of bands have just been forced to adapt and have adapted in really cool ways. And I mean, at least in your case, the EP is coming out, and that's kind of the, I guess, the foremost expression of that adaptation. But what other ways, and even as individuals, have you adapted to the forced present circumstances that we're all living with?
Well, it's definitely meant more recording. Like, when we just got back from tour, we had just a very long list of songs that we wanted to get recorded. And now we actually are being forced to, you know, have that time to go record. So pretty much any band related activity is all for recording now. Yeah.
I feel like that's rare, because not a lot of bands have that, I guess, home recording ability necessarily.
Yeah.
We're very lucky.
Yeah, it's nice. We are lucky in that regard. And then also, like, improving our setup. Like, Meek has gotten so many synths that he didn't have before. And now we can incorporate those synths into our sound. Mm-hmm. And then Allison playing flute and trumpet, you know, we can think about doing that live. And then Amber and I are finally getting into pedals. And so, you know, building pedal boards to, you know, just improve the palette of sounds we get to use. So just like kind of taking this time to train and level up.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to come out just learning, having learned like three more instruments or something like that. I always wrap up interviews by just asking, what have you been listening to lately, especially since a lot more time for recording, also a lot more time for just music listening, whether they're local or not, because everyone loves shouting out the homies, and that's something we're all about. But what have you been turning to kind of keep yourselves sane as far as music in the last, God, like 8 weeks, however long it's been?
You start.
Well, since we live together, we listen to a lot of the same right now, but there's been a lot of Johnny Paycheck.
Johnny Paycheck, 15 beers!
This job and shove it.
Yeah, a lot of Johnny Paycheck.
Love Johnny Paycheck. Oh, my wife. Stravinsky, you even listen to a lot of like Igor Stravinsky stuff, and then a lot of Frank Zappa.
Always a lot of Frank Zappa.
Yeah. Unexpected Stravinsky references, I appreciate that.
Stravinsky and Paycheck go together like that.
Were you still going?
No, I wasn't. I was just going to say your name.
Oh, okay. Wait, say my name.
Meek!
Meek.
Anita!
I've been listening to a lot of... I've been, like, obsessed with Steve Albini because I think he's incredibly problematic. but I don't know. I have like, sometimes I find like these artists that I have like this love hate relationship with, and it always results with me being like low key obsessed. So I've been going back and listening to his entire, like all of his different bands. Like, mostly this week I've been focused on, Shellac, and, his, unfortunately named band from the early 90s, Rape Man. Yeah.
That sounds on brand for Albini. Yeah, jeez.
Yeah, and it's crazy because the band's so good, but you can't just be like, oh yeah, go check out this band, Rape Man.
You can't share that to the Instagram story.
Some early post-rock stuff in there, super influential. It's real good, but then like, you know, like there's also songs on there that are just like, you know, I know you're not being super intentionally racist, but this was just like not a song you should have written. Like there's a song on a Rape Man's one album called Hated Chinee about like the struggle of like Chinese railway workers in like the late 1800s, but like just delivered in such an unfortunate way.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I love Steve Albini, though. It's a problem. He's fantastic. His music's great. Check out Steve Albini. But yeah. also, just like Slint. Lots of Slint.
Oh, yeah.
Also, there's a Slint reference on Thousand Hertz by Shellac.
Interesting.
Okay, my top three this week, at least, have been like, I've listened to a lot of Marmalade, and then Snarky Puppy, and okay, this, if you have not listened already,
oh my God,
you have to listen to the How to Train Your Dragon soundtrack. It is so good.
Oh. It goes pretty hard.
It does.
Like, times. I listened to it in the car. It slaps.
Everyone has like that one friend that's just like obsessed with How to Train Your Dragon, like in the soundtrack specifically. There's always like
the
one friend.
Just the soundtrack. Meek listened to it with me and he agreed.
I agree. It's so good. It's stupid.
I'm not denying that. One of like my 25 iTunes purchases was like one of the songs. So I'm not hating. But
the
just...
whole album.
That's funny.
John Powell is a great guy.
Very, very opposite of Steve Albini. The How to Train Your Dragon soundtrack.
Put all of their music together in like a playlist and just throw it on shuffle.
That sounds disorienting.
Yeah, to say the least.
We have very eclectic music taste.
Yes.
Yeah, I would never have guessed. Cool.
Oh, also, Princess Nokia.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. Did she put out like a double album recently, or was that last year?
She sure did.
Okay.
It's dope. Both of them.
Both of them.
So when I'm not listening to Steve Albini, Princess Nokia.
On that Princess Nokia note, I think that's it. Cool. Thank you so much for going on this weird video interview journey that we've adapted to somehow. I really appreciate it. The EP, and I'm Not Even Having Fun Anymore, is out May 26th. I believe it'll probably be out by the time you're hearing this, dear listener. But if you haven't listened to it, pause this, listen to it right now, and then come back. Like, I don't even care about how it flows. But
isn't this the end?
Pause it. Listen to the last.
Yeah, yeah. You make a good point.
Where the interview really starts.
Yeah, you gotta savor that outro, and I hope people have at least listened to the EP before they listen to the interview. That I don't know, but that's check it out. The band is just at Alien Book Club Band, I think, on everything. Correct. So
Twitter is Alien B Club.
Oh, Alien B Club.
Right. Twitter, what the hell. Check out the EP, follow Alien Book Club. Thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you.
The Ear Coffee Podcast is a companion to the blog of the same name. If you like this episode, please leave us a rate and review so we can stand out among the other music podcasts. You can follow us at Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Ear Coffee. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.